You are listening to a sermon by Laurel Borisenko, recorded on Sunday, July 30th, 2017, at the Point Grey Interminonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only, and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
It's always such a blessing for me to come back to this church family. Although it was not a long period of time that I was here, it was an intense time, and I established relationships that have lasted now through the years. I think John and Erna were the first people to warmly welcome me as I came here as a stranger. I had met also Chris Friesen, came to volunteer. I was working at Immigrant Services Society of BC. I ran their host program when I was here, 91 to 93. And so just met people by the by and ended up in this community and then ended up in the Bible study with John and Erna and Andre and Hannah Laurie and other people. And I guess I've never looked back since. And it's always such a blessing to come back to this church family. And as I was preparing for this talk this morning, I was also just thinking about my own faith journey, incorporating creative expression and the arts. And it struck me that the last time I spoke here was at the end of my time with Mennonite Central Committee. I did the storytelling tour that often MCC volunteers do, and I went across the country. I think I started in Halifax and ended on the West Coast, and my theme was similar. It was about our faith response to art and our creative imperative. And Andre and Hannah Laurie helped me to put up a display of my paintings. Do you remember?
I
don't even remember the exact title. I just remember that was a general theme. That was in 2006. And I guess what struck me is that back in 2006, I had no idea that I would kind of continue so strongly in that direction to the point of investing 5.5 years of my life to write a PhD thesis on that topic. And just one other kind of note, sort of skipping around a little bit chronologically, but this place, when I first came in 1992, was also the seed of my own creative journey, because it was at that time I had to have major surgery, and I was anticipating then being at home for 6 weeks post-op recovery. And so in preparation, I bought a sketch pad and pencils. Now, up until that time, I was one of those people with that little voice in the back of my head that said, "You can't draw. You can't even draw stick people well." That was the voice, and I believed that voice. I believed that voice for a long time, for many, many years. But then, for some reason, you know, at that time, I bought the sketch pad and I bought the pencils in an act of faith, and I said to that voice, "Shut up. You get out of my head. I'm not listening to you anymore." And I started sketching. I have a lot of sketches of West Van, because I was living on Kitts Point, and I would just sit on the bench and sketch the ocean and boats, and they weren't good, but I didn't care. You know, that wasn't the point. They were part of my expression. And then, so from that seed of saying shut up to this negative voice in my head, I just kept going. And so then, when I was in Burkina Faso with Mennonite Central Committee, I also was responsible for 10,000 villages and meeting a lot of artists. I ended up painting with this Burkina artist, and it could be probably some of the paintings that I displayed here, we did together. And eventually, then, I ended up having an art exhibit at my church in Geneva. I had an exhibit with artists in Zambia that I painted with when I was living there, and also one when I went back to the Edmonton Mennonite Center for Newcomers. They had, at that time, this little art gallery downtown that was empty at the moment, and I had an exhibit there. So it was from the basis of this experience of my faith perspective as a person of faith, seeing the violence in the world and being involved in these situations, but then also having developed this creative side, that's how I ended up developing my research question. I wanted to marry these values and beliefs and interests that I had. And so the research question then that I developed, and this is back like end of 2009, early 2010, was to look at how communities that had been through violent conflict used creative expression to move toward healing and reconciliation and ultimately peace building. And it was because I had been so humbled by the resilience that I saw in these communities and these individuals that had survived violent conflict, often politically based. And so the question in my mind was, how? Like, how do you wake up every morning and put one foot in front of the other and take care of your families and sing, you know, very similar to some of the songs that we've sung this morning, that that you have the ability to sing? It was very well attuned, if I may say, to my own thoughts and thinking. So that's kind of the context to my journey and to how I developed this question. And so I'm going to now start with the more theological and biblical basis to this proposition. And that is my belief that creative expression is part of our human identity and part of our Christian identity. And I support this proposition with 3 points. And I put a note here to say it's not a Baptist sermon because each point doesn't begin with the same letter of the alphabet, which is part of my growing up experience. My points are that we are image bearers of a creator God, that the Bible is given to us as story, and that Jesus communicates to us as a storyteller. And when I refer to story, I would like to just keep in mind that I see all creative expression, all modes of creative expression, as different ways of telling a story. And so we can tell stories through oral tradition, through words, through books, through writing, but we can equally tell stories as we dance and as we drum and as we paint. That's a story, isn't it? That we're looking at there. We tell stories as we weave and as we sew. And so all forms of creative expression are ways to tell stories. So the first point then, as image bearers of a creative God, it's the very essence of who we are as creatures of this creator God. This is our ontology. There are these words that I really like using, you know, now that I have the PhD in my name. So ontology is one of them. It's the study of being, our the essence of our being. A couple of authors refer to humans as homo fictus or homo literatus, and that is just human beings that create fiction and create literature. What is the first verse in the Bible? In the beginning, God created. So we have this creator God at the very essence of who we are. Hilary Brand says, anyone who believes in God as creator must take a serious responsibility for tending and tilling our cultural earth. And I love that that expansion on the creation mandate that we have. So that this, my second point is that God has given us the Bible as story. I'd like to go back to the first verse of the Bible. In the beginning, God created. That sounds to me a little bit like once upon a time. It's the beginning of telling a story, isn't it? And it is the record that God has given us of how El is and how we should live as created creatures. And he's given us this story in a whole variety of different genre. So if you think about the genre that the Bible is written in, we have historical narrative, we have legal narrative, we have census lists, we have the wisdom literature, we have poetry, we have songs, parables, letters, myth, and allegory. All of those different ways of communicating stories communicate to us in different ways. Going back then just to some biblical examples, after the creation of Eve, Adam creates a poem, "Bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh." Exodus 12:24, at the author says, "Tell the story of the Exodus. At every Passover feast remembrance, from this time through the generations, every year, tell the story to your children, to your children's children." After the Israelites passed across the River Jordan, they were told to build a memorial of stones, stones in the river. And we still build memorials today. Then in Exodus, if you look in chapters 25 and 26, a detailed description of the tabernacle and how that tabernacle should be built, and all the details of the wood and the stones and what it should look like. Then think now to Revelation and the description of the New Jerusalem. Again, a detailed description of what that should look like. So, Jesus as a storyteller. Jesus taught the crowds and his disciples through stories and parables. And then they, in turn, told stories and wrote letters, related dreams that they had. And all of this, then, is recorded in the canon of our Bible. Jesus was asked a legal question, "Who is my neighbor?" And he responds with a parable of the Good Samaritan. He often is responding to parables with parables. Jesus is the incarnation, telling the story of God with the actions of his life as well as with his words. Lucy Shaw says, "When God reasons with us, it's not by creed or abstract propositions or dogma, but by images." While we may find the creeds beautiful and instructive, doctrine by itself doesn't tend to foster that intimate relationship with God that we all hunger for, but story does. Story connects to us in a deeper place that we relate to and that we remember and that we communicate to other people. I get to know myself, other people, and my God through stories. Maybe this is because story allows for more complexity and messiness than facts do. Good stories teach us that life is complicated and there's rarely easy answers, let alone the happily ever after. So I'm going to move now from our creative mandate as image bearers of the Creator God and using this creative mandate in the service of the Prince of Peace. And so now this is my movement from the ontology of how we are created as beings to how we express this. And now I'm going to rely on John Paul Lederach, who I hope that lots of people in this room know and are familiar with. And if you don't, I encourage you to pick up any of his books. John Paul Lederach is a Mennonite. He is a peace practitioner, and he is an academic and a researcher, and he writes beautifully. And one of the books that he has written is called The Moral Imagination, from which I borrow the title of my sermon and the course. He defines the moral imagination as the capacity to imagine something rooted in the challenges of the real world, yet capable of giving birth to that which does not yet exist. So I hear also definitions of hope and definitions of faith in that definition. Faith is something unseen, but that we hope for and that we move toward. So his basic tenet and his experience is that transcending violence requires imagination, which translates into creative acts. The process of the creative act opens us up to different ways of knowing. We can know things kinetically, visually, orally, and metaphorically. And this brings me to one of my next favorite words, which is epistemology. And epistemology, then, is the theory of knowing. How is it that we know? I think that relates back, then, to knowing and understanding things as doctrine on one particular level, and then knowing them in a more intimate and deeper manner in our beings as story that we relate to and that we communicate to others. In his experience as a peace practitioner, this means that transforming understanding and opening up new possibilities that break away from dead ends, it is to use the artist's intuition to appreciate the complexity of human experience. So to capture this in an image or a story. And he himself, if you read his books, has given many examples of communities that were engaged in creative acts or creative activities that changed the very nature of the situation of conflict or the dilemmas that they faced and brought about surprising creative solutions to contracted violence. So Lederach has identified four characteristics of those individuals or communities that exhibit the moral imagination or the peace-building imagination. He says the first characteristic is organic interdependence. They see their communities as a web of relationships that include their enemies. And so they're moving away from this binary us, them, you, me kind of way that you see people. And if these communities are able to see their community as a whole, they're more creatively open to listening and to problem solving with the whole community. The second characteristic is dynamic curiosity. They seek to understand the conflict. What are the root causes? Who benefits from the conflict? And what is their role in this conflict? And if you have this curiosity and you try to understand root causes, you're more placed to come up with solutions that are actually going to address what caused the conflict in the first place. So often, the solutions that we have are really solutions to satisfy our own lust for retributive justice. They're really not solutions to the problem at hand. The third characteristic is artistic creativity. These communities have inventive solutions that are necessary for their survival. They foster genius in their problem solving. And what I love about this point is that he is putting their artistic creativity at the center of their ability to survive. This isn't something peripheral. this isn't something that's optional. If we have time, if we have a little bit of extra money in our budget, if we have nothing better to do, you know, let's paint a picture or sing a song. It's necessary to their survival because it opens up new ways of thinking and of problem solving. The fourth characteristic is risk. These are communities that are willing to take risks, to trust, to let go of safety, familiarity, and privilege. And you can see how that relates to the first point of seeing their community in a web of relationship. It takes a huge risk to be able to do that, to have the capacity to include your enemies in a dialogue, in a conversation. And he has the most beautiful quotation that I love related to this point. And this is his experience of working in one of the communities of a violent situation. He says, "Though always watching and assessing with eyes and wisdom born from years of surviving cycles of violence, these peacemakers in these communities that have these characteristics, they still reached out, never knowing when extending their hand toward those who wished them harm would be the opening to constructive change or their last act on earth." And let me tell you, as you read the news, it often was their last act on earth. We know that. We know that as we hear stories of the survivors that come to our shores, the ones that were able to make it here, tell us stories about the ones who didn't make it, for whom that was their last act on earth. And the last quotation of Lederach: "We live by the stories we tell. Once guns are chosen as the way to tell our story, the modality by which we communicate, it becomes hard to find our way back to words." We know that well as peacemakers, as Mennonites. And I want to ask those who choose guns as the way to tell their stories, as the ways to solve their problems, so how are you doing so far with that solution? Rhetorical question. One of the most difficult questions that Lederach poses is how do we transcend the cycles of violence that grip our human communities while we're still living in them? And this was the question also I asked in my own research. How can you forgive and heal when the violence continues? And I'm going to just leave that as a question. I'll refer you to Lederach's books, where he does address that in more detail. In my own thesis, I just leave that open as a very, very difficult question, but a real one. And that question is actually related to Lederach's definition of the moral imagination. He refers to the fact that it's imagining something rooted in the challenges of the real world and yet capable of giving birth to that which does not yet exist. And it doesn't yet exist because we may still be caught in those cycles of violence. I'd like to just share with you a few examples of arts-based strategies that I learned about as part of my research. The first one is going back to the siege of Leningrad in 1941. There were performances going on throughout the siege. And in one performance of a symphony, the theater was being bombed during the performance. The director stopped the performance and asked the audience, "What do you want us to do? Should we stop or should we continue?" The audience said, "Continue." And they did. They put on a full performance on the day that the Germans had planned to capture Leningrad. It was a superb gesture of defiance. It was broadcast over the entire city, including the frontline soldiers. The Germans heard, to their astonishment, this music being performed. It was, it made an incredible difference to the mood of the city. At the end of the war, some Germans came forth they came to the city and they found this conductor and they told him that they knew at that moment that they heard the music, they would never take the city. I move on then to the Siege of Sarajevo. Art brings people together and makes them human. It was in the midst of the Siege of Sarajevo that Peres Pasevich started a film festival, and he called it Beyond the End of the World. People were running through sniper fire to go to the cinema to buy their tickets. They would wait for the sniper fire to slow down and run across the street. They sold out the tickets. A journalist asked Peres, "What are you doing running a film festival in the middle of a war?" Logical question. His reply, I love it. "And why are they running a war in the middle of my film festival?" Is that not the appropriate question? An example also now from Mostar, from Bosnia. During the worst fighting, pitting Bosnians and Croats and Serbs, former neighbors and friends, against each other, at nightfall, these enemy soldiers would put down their guns and meet in darkened cafe to play their beloved music together for hours each night. Out of this experience, the now famous Mostar Sevda Cafe group of musicians was born. In Sarajevo, the strong cafe culture survived the war, and a few kept resistant cafes served as venues for artists, poets, and writers who kept meeting across these sectarian lines. So I was in Mostar recently because I'm living in Budapest. I had a holiday in Croatia, and we did a side trip to Mostar, and I had misunderstood this quotation that I got from a friend's paper. I went looking for the Sevda Cafe in Mostar because I'm in Mostar, and you know, this is part of my research and my interest, and I want to find this cafe. And I asked several people. I asked at the tourist info. I asked this tour guide. I asked older people, and nobody knew where the Sevda Cafe or this cafe was. So when I read back again, I realized it wasn't one actual cafe. They told me Sevda is our word for peace, and it was a kind of a musical movement or a style of music. So I was looking for an actual physical place that didn't exist. So I want to just end this talk by saying, for me personally, it just seems a extraordinary blessing and a miracle that God gives us this imperative to be creative, and this is essential to our being and who we are, and it's part of the solution to evil in the world, and that it works. Blessings all mine and 10,000 beside. Amen.